Big Finish presents Doctor Who, Short Trips. The Meaning of Red by Rod Brown. Read by Nicola Bryant. About 18th century England? The Doctor asked in eager anticipation as Perry stepped into the TARDIS console room. If I get my timings right, I could introduce you to Capability Brown. I've always had a soft spot for Capability. He could teach you about landscaping and planting schemes while I pop forward a year or two to catch the first match at Lord's. Perry sighed. She really had no idea what he was talking about, but recognised all too well that puppy dog enthusiasm. Actually, Doctor, she tried to explain, I was hoping for something a bit more exciting. The Doctor looked a little quashed, then jolted into action, giving Perry the broadest of smiles. He dramatically flipped a switch on the console. As the lights finally came back on, and the two travellers picked themselves off the floor, the Doctor winced, expecting a caustic telling off. Instead, Perry just laughed. But her improved mood was not to last, as the Doctor turned on the scanner. They had landed, but all they could see was rocks, sand, more rocks, and dust. Perry glared at him. But the Doctor was keen to convince her that no, this was something exciting. It was her future. And judging by the settlement he'd detected about 3 miles away, there was the makings of a new Earth colony here. What could possibly be more fascinating? Crossing the TARDIS's threshold, Perry was immediately struck by the shimmering heat. Otherwise, there seemed nothing remarkable about the dull, characterless vista that greeted her. But just as she was about to turn back, she spotted a tiny green bush nestled amid a nearby rocky outcrop, dotted with bright red flowers. Now this was more like it, Perry thought. The chance to discover a brand new plant species. So much better than a boring botany lecture from some old guy with a weird name from the 1700s. She hurried over and knelt down on the hot, hard sand to get a better look. It was amazing! Amongst all this harshness, here was a small, fragile plant, fighting for its very survival in an unforgiving environment. The shiny foliage felt almost like plastic, whilst the aroma from the flowers was indescribably glorious. Perry turned back to the TARDIS to call the Doctor and saw him through the doorway, head bent over the controls. But suddenly, without warning, the ground directly beneath the TARDIS began to quake, causing the blue box to rock chaotically. Perry watched helplessly as the Doctor hung onto the console, his expression one of pure panic. Then she saw him no more, as the TARDIS door slammed shut, leaving only the distant sound of a low booming bell to escape from within. This was replaced, seconds later, by the strange groaning of the ship's engines, and the TARDIS slowly vanished from sight. As it did so, the earth tremors subsided, and Perry found herself all alone on a desolate alien world. For the first few seconds, she stood still and silent, lost in confusion and shock. She'd seen the Doctor's reaction just before the TARDIS disappeared, so knew he hadn't left by choice. But did that mean he was coming back for her? Minutes passed. Hysteria began to tap at the edges of her consciousness, but she refused to let it take hold. Of course he'd return. Okay, she hadn't been travelling with him long, but she knew he was one of the good guys who wouldn't just maroon her, leaving her prey to whatever lived on this planet. That thought chilled her. She may not yet have seen any animal life, but that didn't mean that there weren't any hungry carnivores lurking just out of sight. Or under the sands. Steeling herself, Perry scanned the flat horizon and saw glistening far away what she hoped was the settlement the doctor had mentioned. Knowing she couldn't stay out for long in these barren, exposed surroundings, she set off. After what seemed like an eternity, but was, in all likelihood, no more than an hour, Perry was ready to collapse. The heat was unbearable, and there was nowhere to shelter. Sweat ran from every pore, and the thin, dry air was making it hard for her to breathe. But Perry knew she had little choice except to press on. And eventually, she could make out in the distance a modular, octagonal building of glass and white plastic. If she could have broken into a run, she would have done. Instead, she simply stumbled onwards until finally her spirit ran as dry as the dust billowing around her, and she fell to the earth. Perry slowly opened her eyes. Her head was pounding, and it took several seconds for her to focus. When she did, she saw that she was lying on something like a hospital trolley, a hard, raised bed with rails on either side. Around her, a cacophony of crates and boxes were piled high. Strange-looking equipment lay scattered on the floor, whilst maps, charts, and photographs covered every wall. Stretching to get a better look, Perry realized that something was clamped to her left arm. "Hey!" she shouted indignantly, then immediately regretted her outburst, as in response she heard someone approaching from behind. Fearing the worst, Perry retreated into the trolley as far as she could, given the restraint, so was hugely relieved when a kindly-looking middle-aged African woman came into view.
"You're awake, at last," she asked, regarding Perry over the top of her glasses.
Perry nodded silently, not appreciating the rhetorical nature of the question.
"Sorry," the woman smiled back. "You hardly need my pointless questions, do you? So, welcome to the habitat."
There was something, both in the warmth of her voice and the depth of her eyes, that reminded Perry, somehow, of the doctor. As if this was someone who could be trusted completely. The woman introduced herself as Professor Kwame Richards, leader of an expeditionary force sent here to Kalito to determine if it could support a future colony, to take pressure off a beleaguered and expended Earth. It was the professor herself who had first spotted Perry, now 3 days ago, as she approached the habitat before collapsing. The young woman had been immediately brought inside, where she'd been found to be suffering from advanced dehydration, despite only short-term exposure to the planet's inhospitable conditions. Hence the saline drip now attached to her arm and the meds that had been administered.
"Where on earth was your protective suiting?" Kwame asked. "That ridiculous clothing you were wearing was hardly appropriate."
Perry bristled with offence, but quickly swallowed her pride, realising that there were far more important considerations here. Such as, if she'd been unconscious for 3 days, where was the doctor?
Have you found anyone else?" she stammered.
Kwame shook her head and described how she'd assumed Perry to be the sole survivor of a crashed scouting party, bound, no doubt, for one of Kalito's neighbouring satellites. Perry saw no need to provide an alternative explanation. She slumped back onto the hard pillow and tried to take it all in. Had she really been abandoned here? In this wilderness? And then, as she thought about her predicament, she began to realise that nothing here really made any sense. If the planet's environment truly was as unrelenting as it seemed, then who in their right mind would consider it as a place to settle? Kwame explained, however, that before departing for Kalito, they had, of course, conducted years of tests using unmanned shuttles and drones. Everything had suggested that the planet offered near-perfect Earth-like conditions, with a steady, temperate climate, lush vegetation, and a healthy, nutrient-rich soil. Almost as soon as Kwame and her crew had landed on the planet, things had changed dramatically. The temperature had increased threefold within the first 24 hours, and the rains had stopped. Within days, the vegetation had shriveled and decomposed, and the soil quality deteriorated. Yet there was no rational explanation for any of these environmental changes. "It's like the global warming Earth suffered many decades ago, but speeded up beyond anything we've ever experienced," Kwame rationalized. "And the net result, Kalito is no longer a viable option for settlement. So we've been left to fend for ourselves. Earth no longer has any interest in us, and no spare resources to mount a rescue. Anyway, we're a political embarrassment. Best left to die here alone. We've already lost three of our crew somewhere out there, and it won't be long before the rest of us disappear or starve, including my son." Clearly distraught, Kwame hurried from the room. Unsure how to respond, Perry didn't have long to think before the drugs in her system once again took hold, and she fell back into a deep sleep. When next she awoke, the room was in semi-darkness. Realizing that the drip had now been removed from her arm, Perry clambered off the bed and clumsily crossed the floor, knocking over several boxes on the way. She found herself in the outer corridor that encircled the habitat and looked out onto the planet's surface through the long, horizontal windows. From here, Kalito seemed still, peaceful, alluring and beautiful. But Perry's thoughts were soon interrupted by the sound of people talking. Following the voices, she found her way to the main living area of the base. Six heads spun around to face her as she entered. Sensing Perry's unease at the sudden attention, Kwame jumped to her feet, took Perry by the arm, and led her to a seat. She then introduced her to the rest of the crew, her husband Rob, who greeted Perry with a smothering hug. Their son, Alex, a muscular, good-looking boy, similar in age to Perry. Then there was Diego Garcia, an agriculturalist whose weathered features suggested a life lived outdoors. And finally, two technicians, the younger, willowy and strikingly attractive, Amanda Friedman, and her physical opposite, Anya Kearney. It didn't take long for Perry's innocent charm and genuine offers of help to endear her to the group, and they all sat talking well into the night. From their sparky conversations and easy demeanour, it became increasingly clear to Perry that, although these people were under significant strain, the bond of friendship and camaraderie between them was tangible. They really seemed like the most adorable, tight-knit family. A thought which unwittingly upset Perry, as she remembered how her own family had once been so happy, until Howard had come on the scene. Pushing such unsettling thoughts to the back of her mind, Perry decided to focus instead on the people around her. And eventually, she began to relax. That was until the screaming started. At first, Perry thought the strange, distant howling was just the wind blowing outside. But the reactions of the others told her that it wasn't so. They fell into an immediate silence and tensed, listening for the next noise. It followed minutes later and was significantly louder. An inhuman, undulating cry. Gradually, the screams got closer and closer, each time seeming to come from a different point around the habitat perimeter, until slowly they grew quieter, before eventually dissipating into the night air. Kwame was the first to speak, answering Perry's unspoken questions. "We haven't heard that since the others went missing." Her voice trailed off before she explained to Perry how she had hoped that whatever creature was responsible had moved on to hunt further afield, given that the screams hadn't been heard now for weeks. Perry wanted to know what kind of animal it was, but no one had laid eyes on it, nor had they ever found the bodies of their three former crewmates who had vanished whilst making initial attempts to fertilize and plant the land. "We act as before then," Kwame declared. "No one is to go outside unless absolutely essential, and even then, never unaccompanied. We use whatever resources we have at hand to make life as bearable in here for as long as we can." And that was it. End of the pep talk. Almost in unison, everyone stood up and headed off to their sleeping quarters, leaving Perry to make herself comfortable in the main living area. But having only just slept for days, and with adrenaline coursing around her body, Perry was far from ready to close her eyes. So she sat for several hours, staring out at the planet beyond the windows, lost in contemplation. The following morning, Perry was keen to make good on her offer of help. After all, these people had saved her life and were now sharing their precious food and water with her. Over breakfast, they picked up their conversation from the night before. Perry wanted to understand in particular how, if the planet was unable to sustain crops, did that red-flowered bush seem to thrive? Now that she had chance to properly view her surroundings from the shelter of the habitat, she could see that it grew everywhere. Surely that meant that other plants could too. But no. Kwame, Rob, and Diego were adamant that in its current state, Kalito was wholly barren, and that the one bush was an unexplained anomaly. "The exception that proves the rule," was the somewhat unsatisfactory explanation. So, not wishing to appear ungracious, Perry gave up on this line of questioning. For the rest of the day, and those that followed, Perry trailed Kwame, getting to understand how things worked here and how best she could assist. Perry quickly came to love talking to the older woman, whilst clearly so much more experienced, not only in botanics, but in life also. Perry never felt patronized or belittled by the professor. Instead, just encouraged. It was like she was half tutor, half mother, and Kwame's husband Rob was equally caring and supportive. Between them, and not forgetting Diego, Perry was learning more about agronomy than ever she had, sat in a stuffy classroom or lecture hall. And she was applying that knowledge to practical use, helping grow fruits and vegetables inside the habitat to eke out their existence. It was giving her a sense of purpose she'd never previously realized had been missing. And so the group worked day in, day out. Five of them focused on cultivation, whilst Amanda and Anya continued their efforts to repair the shuttle in which the crew had made their calamitous planetfall, and which now lay shattered less than 1 kilometre from the habitat. As that first week rolled into another and another, Perry found herself settling comfortably into this bizarre new way of life. More than that, though, she realised that she was actually happy here, working hard for sure, but alongside people with whom she developed a real connection. They were helping bring out the best in her. Okay, she could still be headstrong and stubborn, but at least now she recognised it. It also helped, of course, that Alex was always hanging around, and whilst she'd undoubtedly become close to everyone here, there was something special about him. He may have been too much the science geek to have ever made high school football hero or prom king, but his gentleness and good humour were more than enough for Perry. So, all things considered, maybe this wasn't the worst place in the universe to be stranded. That was until the screaming began again. Work had finished for the day, and the crew were enjoying their usual meager meal in the main quarters. As had happened before, the screams initially came from afar, before seeming to approach and encircle the habitat, then fade to nothing. Rob was the first to speak, insisting that something must have changed that day to draw the creature's attention. But no one could offer a solution, until Amanda recalled the work that she and Anya had been doing on one of the shuttle's engines that had resulted in an oil leak. Perhaps the scent had attracted the creature? But it hadn't been a major spill, just enough to turn a 2-metre-square section of earth black. Perry couldn't sleep that night for worry. After several hours, though, her eyes were finally beginning to close, when a single scream pierced the air. It was so much louder and so much nearer. It came from somewhere inside the base. Perry sat bolt upright. But there was silence now. Just the usual mechanical clicks and ticks that surrounded her at night. She tiptoed to the doorway and looked out. Nothing. Tentatively, she set off down the corridor, her body pressed hard against the wall. If something was to leap out at her now, what could she do? She was defenseless, but still felt the need to go on, to see if anyone needed her help. Two other figures emerged from a door further down the corridor, Kwame and Rob. Perry rushed into the professor's arms, and Kwame held her tight, though Perry could feel her trembling. Diego also peered out from the safety of his room, as did Alex. That left just Amanda and Anya, who bunked down on the opposite side of the habitat. As the team reached the technician's room, they felt an immediate flood of relief. Nothing seemed disturbed, no sign of entry or damage, but also no sign of the two women. Kwame tapped gently at their door, then opened it slowly. Perry couldn't see what lay inside, but the look on Kwame's face was enough to tell her. They were dead. Once the initial wave of shock had receded, the survivors gathered together. Kwame described as calmly and factually as possible that Amanda and Anya had indeed been attacked, leaving a look of horror and pain etched on their faces, and strangely, their hands clasped to their ears. But there were no other physical signs of assault. Nothing to help determine what the group faced. So, what had done this? Evidently, whatever had let out that scream. But how had it got into the habitat without detection? And how had it left? Or was it
still here. For the rest of the night, the crew camped down in a single cramped room. Yet despite the company, Perry felt alone and vulnerable. She began to fear that she may well end her days here on Kalito, light years away from home. So why hadn't the doctor come to save her? Where was he? Deep in space, high above Kalito, the doctor had problems of his own. Warning lights continued to blaze across the TARDIS console as both time and space warped violently around the ship. The TARDIS was being pulled apart by forces unknown, which had seemed to have targeted her specifically and now refused to let go. Indeed, the ship had already been ensnared and assailed for almost an hour now since leaving Kalito, and the doctor knew that it couldn't last much longer. The first 6 days that followed the deaths of Amanda and Anya were incredibly difficult for everyone. Work had to continue as normal, but everyone was on edge. For the first time, the crew bickered, and each mealtime brought fresh arguments followed by uncomfortable silences. There were even veiled insinuations that one of them was responsible for what had happened, but surely that wasn't possible, thought Perry. Or was it? Kwame and Rob at least found comfort in each other's company. But Alex withdrew into himself, rejecting every awkward attempt that Perry made to reach out to him. And then it happened again. Almost exactly as before. A scream in the dark one night, which ended as abruptly as it started. The crew gathering together. But people missing. No sign of a break-in. And then, the grisly discovery of another victim. Diego. Leaving just Perry, Kwame, Rob, and Alex. By morning, Perry had a theory. Look, if there's some animal here, it has to be able to live off something other than us, she argued. It stands to reason. You've only been here for 6 months, so this creature had to have food native to Kalito. And there's only one form of vegetation here, so that plant with the red flowers has to be the creature's staple diet, yeah? So surely, if we run some tests on its biological composition, that could help us understand what kind of animal could live off it, and maybe how to deal with it. Perry knew that she was clutching at the very thinnest of straws, as did the others. But still, they gave her their support. So later that day, the four of them walked cautiously out onto the planet's surface and collected some samples. Upon returning to the habitat, Perry began her research without delay. From previous investigations, both Kwame and Rob knew that she'd find nothing of distinction or consequence, but nevertheless gave her the space to try. For days, Perry worked tirelessly, subjecting the plants to as many tests as possible. But they showed nothing beyond the most basic cell structure and contained no vitamins, minerals, micronutrients, or indeed anything that could sustain life long term. So Perry tried taking cuttings, exposing each to a different combination of temperature, lighting, and soil types, in the hope of finding some discernible difference triggered by environmental shift. But still, nothing that could help. By the end of the 8th day, Perry was ready to admit defeat. Surely, there was nowhere to go from here. But as she wearily cleared away her experiments, Perry became aware of someone behind her, starting to sing. It was faint, sweet, beautiful. At first,
Perry was entranced. Before the shock of realization hit her, there was no one else there. Then, as the angelic vocal rose in volume, she spotted the gentle rhythmic movement of a cluster of red flowers on a plant that she'd repotted the day before, and knew she'd found the source of the music. And in that moment, Perry felt no fear. The song, if indeed it could be called that, was filling her heart, mind, and soul with the strangest mixture of sadness and joy. It made her think of her family, and in particular, her father, the loving grandparents she'd lost, the family dog who she'd grown up with, and Scott, her best friend from elementary school, to whom she'd pledged her undying commitment right before the car accident. She was distraught, uplifted, broken, and healed, all in a single moment. As the song eventually stilled, and its hypnotic hold on Perry eased, she saw that outside the habitat, green shoots were rising from the earth, bursts of red flowers blossoming in seconds, facing towards her, as any other plant would turn towards the light. There was a new sense of calmness and solemnity in the air. And in that moment, Perry understood.
Look, I know you've put out with my crazy ideas before, she tried explaining to a bemused Kiwami. But now, I get it! I really do! Back in my time, everyone's talking about Gaia, you know? The belief that everything in the natural world is interconnected and codependent. Well, I think that's how things work here. Just think about it. You said that Kalido was like paradise till you arrived. But then you came and disturbed the ecosystem like a cuckoo in the nest, or more like when you get a splinter in your finger and your whole body puts all its energy into pushing it out. In fact, come to think of it, just like that. Kalito got hot, too. The planet wanted you gone. Kiwami rose her hand, signaling for Perry to stop, or at least take a breath. Where was all this coming from, and what did she mean, back in my time? But Perry was too excited to be interrupted. Just look at what's happened, she continued. It all fits. Everyone who's died has been messing with the ecology. Those three who disappeared before I arrived, you said that they'd been trying to plant crops from back home. Well, that must have been like introducing an alien body into Kalido. And then there was the doctor. We landed here, and the TARDIS must have set off every alarm going. Just imagine what damage that level of technology could potentially do to a planet. So Kalido started an earthquake, probably hoping to bury us. And then there was Amanda and Anya. They spilled oil over Kalido, didn't they? Causing more environmental damage. And Diego, hadn't he been conducting soil tests on the day he was attacked? I don't know how, but I just seemed to understand it all when I heard that sapling sing. It was just a young specimen, and probably not yet in tune with its surroundings, so reacting in a way that we wouldn't normally see, or hear. Because then we'd realize that if a newly propagated plant could sing like that, then why couldn't the more mature plant scream? Or even produce a sound at so high a pitch that it kills? I know it seems nuts, but we've got plants all over the habitat, and certainly in everyone's sleeping quarters. They're the perfectly camouflaged assassins!
The stillness that had temporarily descended on Kalito had spread into its outer atmosphere, where the forces that had been imprisoning the TARDIS had finally relaxed their grip. Many of the ship's vital circuits had been burnt out, and the doctor was unsure how long repairs would take. Of greater concern to him, however, were his calculations, which suggested that the 82 minutes he'd endured since leaving Kalito would have equated to months for Perry down on the surface, and that he had no way of knowing if she'd survived that long, or if he'd be allowed to land and try to find her. The doctor had realized that whatever had attacked him first on Kalito and then in space was not a natural phenomenon, but rather something that had been shaped and directed. The attacks had been too targeted, too specific. So now he only had one option: to divert all remaining power to the telepathic circuits and attempt to communicate with, what, the planet itself? To convince it that neither he nor Perry posed a threat. As the doctor placed two cables to his temples, linking his thoughts directly into the TARDIS and beyond, he wished he had a hand free to cross his fingers. This could work, he thought, just as long as no one upsets the status quo any further. But at that very moment, Kwame was preparing something very dangerous indeed. Those who knew her would never have described her as destructive or vindictive. However, after all that she, her family, and crew had been through, Kwame was near breaking point. She knew there was only one way to test Perry's hypothesis and maybe get the answers she needed. So with only a modicum of compunction, she took the cutting that had bewitched Perry and applied a strong acid solution. Kalito's response was instant. The sky outside the habitat immediately blackened, punctured only by excessive lightning strikes, which shot down to the planet, igniting fireballs across the surface. Near hurricane-force gales, and a ferocious rainstorm sprung from nowhere to batter the base. And if the crew thought they'd experienced earth tremors before, they were nothing compared to now. A guilt-stricken Kwame rushed into the main living area to find Rob, Alex, and Perry huddled together in one corner, as Kalito summoned every elemental force to finally rid itself of its unwanted infestation. Windows along the outer side of the habitat now began to implode one by one, and the makeshift walls buckled. "We need to get to the shuttle!" screamed Kwame over the noise of destruction. "It's our only hope!" They set off along the corridor, clinging to each other, while protecting their faces from flying glass as best they could. Breaking cover from the habitat, they raced across the compound, and despite several tumbles as the ground beneath them swelled and receded, they reached the craft in one piece. Kwame flung open the outer door and ushered her husband, son, and Perry inside. Then she slammed the door shut, bolting it from the outside, and walked calmly away. Amidst all the turmoil, she sat down cross-legged on the ground, closed her eyes, and spoke to Kalito, apologizing for the brutal despoiling of its flora and pleading mercy for her family. But this was no longer the time for such things, and Perry watched in horror through one of the shuttle's windows as jagged cracks appeared across the ground, congregating under Kwame, who fell silently into the earth. Perry held her hand to her mouth in shock and turned away, only to meet the ashen faces of Rob and Alex. But there was no time for words or tears. Now it was the shuttle's turn to face the anger of the planet. It started to shift and slide, and Perry knew that it wouldn't be long before the earth underneath gave way. There was now nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. Kalito had won. And then, from the back of the shuttle, Perry heard the most wonderful sound imaginable. The TARDIS! But her elation was only momentary, as the shuttle's rear began to sink. However, this meant that Rob, Alex, and Perry were falling, sliding, towards where the TARDIS waited. Now Perry could see the blue box nestled in a far corner, its doors opening, and the doctor calling, holding out his hand. In seconds, Perry, Rob, and Alex had tumbled inside, and the TARDIS was gone, just as the shuttle began to fall into its fiery grave at the heart of the planet. with Rob and Alex having been dropped off on a truly peaceful colony world. The doctor sought out Perry, who sat alone in one of the TARDIS's cloister gardens. In the few moments he'd spent with her since Kalito, he knew that she'd changed, matured. Indeed, the way in which she'd embraced both Rob and Alex as they'd departed was sign enough that her recent experiences had affected her deeply. She was no longer the impetuous young girl who'd come on board simply looking for a ticket to escape her past, but more the measured, compassionate, and empathetic woman he'd known she'd become. Just maybe not so soon. He sat down on a stone bench next to her. "I'm so sorry, Perry," he began tentatively. "But you really can't blame Kalito. You know I'd never visited it before, but I'd heard it was a place of incredible beauty. And then, when I communed with it, I learned that millennia ago, it had been occupied by some army or another, forging its way across the galaxy. As a result, Kalito, as I knew of it, was destroyed, all in the name of someone else's war. All that beauty, gone, in an instant. It took Kalito thousands of years to even begin to consider recovery, to start to restore its ecological balance. And then your Earth party arrived." Perry looked up at him, tears in her eyes.
"But they didn't mean any harm, Doctor," she implored. "They were good people, just looking for a better life."
The doctor shifted uncomfortably. "I know that, Perry, but Kalito didn't. It couldn't take the risk of being devastated for a second time, not when it still hadn't even finished grieving." At this, the doctor stood up, offered Perry his hand, and led her to the console room. There, he activated the scanner and showed her Kalito drifting in space. Now uninhabited once again, but covered in a carpet of red. Perry looked on in awe, realizing that the flowers had repopulated the surface since their departure. "It's the color of remembrance, the universe over," the doctor whispered. "That's why it's the only living specimen that the planet will now ever allow to prosper." He then flicked a second switch, and the sound of billions of flowers filled the room. A wonderful, sorrowful song of lament. And as had happened before in the habitat, Perry's mind was immediately full of startling images of those that she had lost. Now including Amanda, Anya, Diego, and most poignantly of all, Kwame. But the thoughts didn't scare her. Rather, they filled her with gratitude for the love and joy that those people had brought into her life. The doctor looked wistfully at Perry across the console. "I think it's time we left Kalito to mourn in peace. Don't you?"